And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
You are now tuned into anything potable, the most honorable, the most audible. Hold the applause, like Paul Pierce when he was fresh out the hospital, like Antoine when
welcome
the shots went through.
Anything's potable! Boston Celtics podcast here on the Athletic Podcast Network. I am your host, Sam Jam Packard, professional sports fan. And I am joined, as always, by the kid, the god, the legend himself, Celtics beat reporter from The Athletic, Jay King, ladies and gentlemen. And we are coming to you live right after the Brooklyn Nets take down the Cleveland Cavaliers. And so they will be playing the Boston Celtics in the first round of the NBA playoffs. First game, game one on Sunday. Jay, what's your reaction to the Celtics getting Brooklyn and I guess the Brooklyn Nets win over these Cavaliers?
It's going to be a juicy first round series, isn't it? I mean, on top of the star power of Durant and Irving and Tatum and Brown and the way the Celtics have played over the past few months versus the team with maybe the best player in the world. You also have the whole Kyrie angle, which is obviously, you know, his history with Boston, including last year when he stomped on Lucky.
Stomped the logo. Oh, the worst thing anyone's ever done, stomping the logo.
I'm just saying, but the Celtics responded to that like little children. They were afraid to stand up for themselves. And now I imagine they have a coach who would rather have seen them have a little bit of a reaction to that. So it's going to be a fun series. It's going to challenge the Celtics. It is going to really make them defend, because on top of Durant and Kyrie, who might be the two best isolation players in basketball, there's just a lot of shooting elsewhere. Bruce Brown just had an awesome, awesome game against Cleveland. So it is definitely not the easiest first round matchup the Celtics could have had, but they played their guys, and now we get what should be a really fun matchup.
Yeah, I wouldn't say Bruce Brown. He did have a good game against the Cavaliers, but there's not that much shooting. We saw Seth Curry out there. I don't even think he had any points there tonight. At least he didn't knock down any threes. But it's like hard to take away much from this Cavs game because they were pretty much blitzing every Kevin Durant or Kyrie pick and roll. And we just saw the Nets be able to play 4-on-3 and just get easy bucket after easy bucket with that sweet Bruce Brown to Nick Claxton connection. And just with the Celtics switching everything, it's going to be an entirely different type of basketball game. And the Nets are going to have to go one-on-one, and they are well-equipped to do that with KD and Kyrie Irving. I think where the Celtics have the biggest advantage is on the other side of the court, where I just don't think the Nets necessarily have the defense to hold up with the Celtics, especially if the Celtics kind of ball movement is as good as it's been in, I would say, the last month or so. But it is going to be a very difficult series because, as we saw Kyrie tonight, he made his first 11 or maybe 12 shots. Like, both Kyrie and KD have a potential to go off for an easy 80. I think the question is the Celtics are just going to need to continue scoring the basketball. I mean, the Cavs tonight, they only lost by 7. They didn't really start making shots until like a run in the third quarter. They shot only 44%. The Celtics are going to need to do better from that. And I think one of the recipes for the success for the Celtics is making threes. They're going to need to just continue scoring on the Nets, who don't to me, it looked like they put up much of a defensive resistance. Like, if the Nets are going to win games this series, it feels like it's going to be in some shootouts, and they win like 140 to 130. Where if the Celtics can keep the kind of the scoring down or keep their stars in check, they're going to have a much better chance of winning this series.
Yeah, and I think it'll be interesting to see how the Celtics defend Durant and Kyrie. And I think, you know, Cleveland tried to do more man-to-man early, and Kyrie went wild. Obviously, Durant is going to do what he does. And by the end of it, they were just selling out, double-teaming, and leaving open Bruce Brown and Nicholas Claxton on the backside. Those guys got a ton of easy looks in the fourth quarter because of how Cleveland was forced to guard the other two guys. And for Boston, like, that's part of the challenge of playing the Nets, is you have to balance, you know, making it really difficult on the two main guys and making sure you're not overreacting to them hitting tough shots. You know, they're going to go on runs where they hit tough shots. And I think that's going to be part of the challenge for Boston of the first round series, and a challenge that they wouldn't have gotten, quite frankly, from any other team possible as a first round matchup, is that, you know, there are going to be runs when Kyrie hits six or seven tough shots in a row. There are going to be runs when Durant has 20 or 25 points and a half. And you have to be able to take that and keep your form and make sure that you know, overreacting to those guys doesn't open up cracks for everybody else, and that you still make everybody earn it. And so I do think, you know, this Brooklyn defense is obviously very susceptible, and, you know, they played, you know, just a handful of minutes without Durant. I think he played 41 minutes. He's averaged like more than 40 minutes. They've basically been in a playoff run of their own to try to get into the 7-8 play-in game lately. And so he's been playing a ton of minutes. How do you take advantage of that? Can you tire him out, make him guard, make his minutes more difficult? And then how do you take advantage of when he's out? Because we saw with Cleveland, like, as soon as he went out, Brooklyn just had a really tough time. And I think that should be one of Boston's advantages, is that, you know, they're 7, 8, even ninth man, if they go 9 deep, those guys, you know, can be threats, and they can hurt you. Whereas with Brooklyn, it's they're either choosing offense with Curry or Mills or Dragic, or they're choosing defense with some of the other guys, and they don't have a ton of two-way threats in their rotation.
I don't even know if they have defensive choices, because, like, what's their best defensive
lineup? Bruce Brown,
lineup?
Kessler Edwards, Nick Claxton. Like,
bring it on if you want to put out, like, Nick Claxton and Kessler Edwards for a long extended period of time and just not.
Edwards had a tough little run in that first half.
It feels like if the Nets want to be, like, their most potent or most successful, they need to have someone like Seth Curry or Patty Mills out there, and you want to surround the kind of two main guys with shooting so you can't help off of them. And I just feels like no matter what the lineup that the Nets put out there, the Celtics are going to be able to exploit them, or should be able to, when the Celtics are on offense. I think it's going to be, I'm very curious to see, like, what they do with Andre Drummond, who has like a long history of putting up like 20 games against the Celtics. But it feels like this Celtics team, they can go small. I think if they want to play Andre Drummond and play drop coverage, I feel like that pick and pop with Al Horford can be a real way to attack the Nets. I just don't know what exactly the Nets lineup is. Like, who's their, it's very hard to figure out their best five guys and like what their most potent lineup is on both ends of the court. And is it Kevin Durant at center? Because even then, I still feel like no matter what five guys the Nets run out there, I feel like the Celtics are going to have some sort of offensive advantage or some place to attack, whether it's them playing the kind of the larger guys in Claxton and Drummond. I feel like the Celtics have a way to attack that. Or if they go smaller, I think the Celtics, just with their sheer size, you're just going to have easy post-ups of Jaylen Brown on Patty Mills or Seth Curry or Tatum on those guys, or even Marcus Smart on those guys. It feels like I don't know what exactly the answer is for the Nets in terms of stopping the Celtics.
Yeah, I think that should be the Celtics' biggest advantage in this series, is the size of their perimeter guys and the skill of their perimeter guys versus a backcourt that doesn't have much size and doesn't have much defensive ability. Like, you're going to be able to go at Patty Mills. You're going to be able to go at Goran Dragic. You're going to be able to go at Kyrie. You're going to be able to go at Seth Curry. And you're going to be able to attack those guys on switches and try to get them matched up against Jason Tatum. And that's just going to put them in really, really difficult situations throughout this game, throughout the series. And how the Celtics take advantage of that could determine how the series goes. Like, that should be a huge, huge advantage for them, that the Nets really don't have many options on the perimeter. And even guys like Marcus Smart, Derek White, like, they've got size. They can get to the basket and they can hurt bad defenders. Never mind Tatum, who we saw what he did last time they played Brooklyn, went off for 54 points, I think it was, and really hurt them. Like, they were switching Seth Curry on him. So Brooklyn's going to have to figure out something to be able to hide guys, be able to switch out of switches immediately, be able to double him and recover to other guys. Like, it's going to be really, really difficult for their defense. I think for them, this is probably, if one of the most difficult matchups they could have seen, at least, just because of how much stress Tatum and Brown especially will put on those non-defending Brooklyn perimeter guys. Like, that's a huge, huge issue for Brooklyn to figure out during this series.
And I think it's like KD really has to be, I think, the Nets' best defender in this series if they want a chance at winning this. Like, he is the only guy. Bruce Brown is a very talented player, but he's not, doesn't provide you with the most size. He has like a lot of toughness, and I think he knows the game well. But beyond that, there's Drummond, there's Claxton. I think those guys are going to split time, but then it basically becomes KD's your power forward, and it feels like he's the natural person to guard Jason Tatum. And I know they used Brown on him. I think he did a pretty decent job, albeit in a game that Tatum scored 54. But I think that's another key to the Celtics' success, is making KD really work hard on the defensive end, making Kyrie really work hard on the defensive end, because I think it's just one very good way to make it so both those guys don't go for 40. Like, I think this, for the Nets to win this series, they need both KD and Kyrie, or maybe just one of them, to have super games in 4 out of 7. And I think if you're making both of them work for the 40 to 45 minutes they're going to be on the court the entire time on the defensive end, which I think the Celtics are capable of, it just makes that job for them on offense that much harder, and makes it that much harder to knock down shots. Like, I don't really feel like Kyrie Irving was like put through the runner tonight when he was scored his 34 points. It, like, the Cavs are just really could not make many shots whatsoever. And so the Celtics really going to have to make those guys, and I think especially KD, just because he is the best player in basketball, make him work as hard as possible on the defensive end and hope that affects his offensive game.
Yeah, especially with the amount of minutes that those guys are going to have to play. I mean, we saw it last year when the Nets played the Bucks and Durant was averaging close to 48 minutes a game. I think he played 53 minutes in game 7 of that series. And it didn't really hurt him then. Like, he was able to
he's still to, Kevin Durant. You know who he is.
He was unbelievable. But I think he said after that the series like took basically everything out of him. And that, you know, if he'd had to go into another series, like his legs just weren't there anymore. So even though he was able to summon some in it during that series. Like they really pushed him to the limits of what he could do. And like you said, like Durant, because of their defensive holes, he's going to have to do a lot. And his minutes are going to be really tough. For the Celtics, I think it'll be really interesting. We saw this the last time they played the Nets, where Celtics switched so much, and it's going to put a lot on Al Horford. You know, especially he's had the back soreness that he's talked about recently, that he was dealing with even before the game against Memphis, even though he played and played well. He is going to be out on switches against Kyrie. He is going to be out on switches sometimes against Durant.
They're going to target him.
Yeah, they are definitely going to target him. And I think without Robert Williams behind him, even though Daniel Tice has played well, like that just makes it a little tougher. And you have to execute a little better behind him to make those matchups, make sure that those matchups don't just deteriorate into Kyrie and Durant cooking and getting going and eventually getting to a place where they can hit not just the easy ones, but all the tough ones too. So I could see Horford being targeted like time after time if the Celtics are going to switch as much as they did during the regular season.
Do you think we see a lot of a too big lineup? I mean, they do play, I guess, Drummond and Claxton a lot, but it feels like, do you put Tice and Horford on the court and give, maybe it's two options of guys those kind of one-on-one scores can target, but you have a little bit of the backline support at the rim, or do you expect them to see him go small? I feel like Grant Williams got a lot of time and gets a decent amount of time just up against, I think we saw him get a time guarding Giannis against the Bucks, even guarding up with guys like Jokic. I think no one can really guard KD, but how do you expect them to deal with that big rotation? Do you think they go double bigs? Do you think they kind of go smaller with White, or do you think we see a lot of Grant Williams?
I think, that's going to be an interesting decision. I honestly don't know what the best answer is. I do know that, you know, if the Nets do play Bruce Brown and Nick Claxton a lot, like they did against Cleveland, like they did in crunch time against Cleveland, then those are two, I don't want to say hiding spots because, you know, those guys can do some stuff, but it's like those aren't guys you have to guard super attentively all the time. And if you have Horford and Tice on those guys, then you can have keep size out there and still be able to, you know, not have super, super difficult matchups, except, you know, when you have to go to switches. The Tice Horford duo, you know, we haven't seen a ton of it, obviously, but it's been starting lately, and the Celtics offense has looked really amazing during those minutes. And like I said, like it's been against some teams that haven't been playing everybody, whether because of injuries or like the Grizzlies just were sitting everybody because it was the last game of the season. But the offense during those minutes has been really crisp. And if you can maintain that offense and still have more size out there, then I think you probably try to get away with that. But if the offense starts to go a little bit, and I don't know if it will against Brooklyn because their defense isn't great, then obviously you have Grant Williams to be the four next to Al Horford. The problem with doing too much of that, or maybe even starting that, if you want to do that, is that then you have to go smaller, probably off the bench, whether it's Tatum at four or Brown at four or whatever. You just don't have as much size off the bench in that case. So we'll see what they do. We'll see how long Robert Williams misses. You know, they still haven't ruled him out of the first round. They've said that they don't expect him back in the first round, but they haven't ruled it out yet. So we'll see how much time he needs to miss if he comes back at some point during the first round, because obviously that would change some things for Boston and I think give them a little more margin for error in this series. As long as he's right and there's no promise that he'll be like come back flying around like normal.
Yeah, that's the big question. Is like you don't want to have him come back early and have him, either risk re-injury or just like a lot of his game is predicated on him being the most explosive player on the court. And so if he comes back, especially only 3 weeks after surgery, is he going to be ready to do so? You hear some rumblings. I don't know. You're much more connected to these things too. Most of my rumblings come from just listening to other people's podcasts, but like the fact that they haven't ruled him out of the first round is interesting. The other rumblings we're hearing, and I have just no idea. I would actually be shocked if this happens, but is there a chance Ben Simmons plays in this series?
Yeah, I mean, they've talked about it. Our guy, Shams Charania, has reported that there's, I think he said there's optimism that Simmons could come back at some point in the first round. Nobody's really seen him run, at least.
He has not been on a basketball court for the entire year. I feel like that's just a crazy decision to try and integrate him onto a team where no one on the team has played a game with him.
Yeah, and at the same time,
they could use the help.
They could use the help. They could use the size. They could use the defense. If he is right, and I have no clue whether he is, then he gives you another option against Tatum. He gives you another option against Brown. He lets you sit one of the smaller guys who would be a defensive hole and somebody to target. So if he is able to play, he would fill a lot of holes. And you can see how Bruce Brown had just so much space. You know, like that's what playing with Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving does for you is all of a sudden you have so much space to operate. And if he's the screener and the roller and you have to double Durant because he's Kevin Durant, then maybe that's a way for Ben Simmons to really thrive. But like you said, you know, he hasn't played in a year. And I think the last time Steve Nash spoke about it, like, he hadn't even progressed to running yet. So it's tough to play in a playoff series if you haven't been running much or if you only recently progressed to running. And, you know, the last time we saw him in a competitive game was a year ago. He's dealt with back stuff. He's dealt with all sorts of stuff. So he's like the ultimate wild card in this series because if he does play and he's right, then that's a major, major thing. But also there's a chance that he's not right, that he hurts the Nets because he can't move right, and because he's a non-shooter, and because I don't want to say a weird fit, but he's not the easiest guy to fit into a basketball roster. Like, he's a very unique player, especially when you're playing in the half court, which in a playoff series you tend to do a lot of. So ultimate wild card, and I have no clue if he'll play. It does seem far-fetched to me that he'll play just based on the updates of what he's done so far. It just doesn't seem like someone who's progressing toward being available for the highest intensity basketball of the season against a team that has the best defense in the NBA. But we'll see. I mean, and obviously that's a big deal one way or another.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
It's just a wild idea to, like, the last time we saw Ben Simmons was in that Hawks series where he seemed scared to go to the line, scared to even attempt a dunk, got called out by his teammates for his debut or his like return to basketball to be in the playoffs in high intensity moments where he has never played with any of these teammates. It just seems like a incredibly wild idea. And then you throw on the stuff you just mentioned about him not apparently like having run yet. It's entirely insane to me. I think like Bruce Brown does get to operate with a lot of space, and Bruce Brown, I just checked it, 40% from three this year. I mean, only taking 1.3 per game, but still a much more willing shooter than Ben Simmons. I think it's just, it would be, I think, just a crazy adjustment for the Nets to have to go in and try to figure out how to integrate Ben Simmons into their playoff roster, where I just don't think they have the largest margin for error. It'd be crazy. I think in front of the Boston fans, like, I think there's just no way Ben Simmons comes back if it's not a game in Brooklyn. I just, like, that's just feels like you're asking a lot of your temperamental star to make his return to basketball in front of the TD Garden faithful.
I mean, you can't shield him forever, though. Like, he's a guy, obviously, his last playoff game did not go well. The fourth quarters in his last playoff series did not go well. But he's played a lot of playoff basketball. He's played a lot of...
Never been, like, out of the second round, though.
I'm just saying, like, you if he's ready to play, they're not going to sit there and say, you know what, we're going to shield Ben from playing in Boston. We're going to hold off two more games. Like, that's just not something that I believe the Nets should ever consider in their equation.
I think they just, he might not adjust that well to the environment.
Yeah. I mean, that's certainly fair. He wasn't like he was lighting the playoffs on fire the last time he was in them. The other part of this is, you know, I think Bruce Brown, the way he played tonight, the way he played last season in the playoffs, he's one of their, what, four best players?
I think he's their third most important player after KD and Kyrie. He played 40 minutes tonight. Like, he needs to play, like, be probably their best defender and then a playmaker for them on offense.
Yeah, and I just think that if Simmons does come back, it's going to be tough to play him and Bruce Brown together because their skill sets are very similar. And by that, I mean they don't shoot. Neither
you can't have two complete non-shooters on the floor. Maybe you can play, like, Simmons works just giving you some size and you play like a Simmons as the five man and then surround him with KD, Kyrie, Patty Mills, and Seth Curry. But even then, it just feels like you're asking a lot of Ben Simmons in that scenario.
Yeah. And I mean, for the Celtics, like, I think they're obviously one of the bigger concerns for them is, do they have enough shooting, especially in crunch time? We've seen, you know, earlier this year, maybe that's not even right to think back on it, but the execution wasn't always great. They haven't played a ton of close games since then because they've been blowing teams out, but still. And I think in this series, like, you're going against Kevin Durant, you know, like, if you are failing to execute, then the other team is coming back and it's Kevin Durant. And so there's pressure just in that, you know, like it's just added pressure that Kevin Durant's on the other side. And so I think from a mental challenge standpoint, like, this is a totally different series than it would have been if it was Cleveland. Totally different series than it would have been, even if it's Toronto, which is, I think, a very good team. But, like, these guys, they know Kevin Durant. They played the Nets last year, and obviously situations were very different for both teams. But they got wiped out, and Brown didn't play, and Romeo Langford and Jabari Parker did play, and James Harden was on the court. So a lot is different. But at the same time, like, this is a Celtics team that as much playoff history as Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum and Marcus Smart have, like, the situation is very different now. And I feel like with their current formula, as well as they've played over the last few months, they're still very unproven in the playoffs. And maybe that's not fair because they, you know, Tatum's been to the Eastern Conference Finals twice. Jaylen's been three times, although he was very much a bit piece the first year he went when he was a rookie. But I do think, like, the way that those guys are used now as one and the first and second option and the really who's number three, I don't know. But it's a very different challenge for them now than it was in the past. And so I do think, like, there's something to needing to overcome Kevin Durant that will be an issue that they have to conquer, if that makes sense. And maybe I'm just giving that too much credit, but I know how much Tatum has looked up to Durant, and this is really, like, the biggest challenge when Ime told Tatum earlier in the season, like, don't look up to these guys. Like, you are these guys, you know, and don't give them too much respect. Like, this is his opportunity to go out and be like, yeah, I'm next up. And not only am I next up, I'm up now. And so Tatum whipped their ass last year. Like, he really killed them with the exception of one game. But this is a big series for him. And, like, Kevin Durant is the guy. He's the guy right now. And the Celtics need to beat him. So that was great analysis, wasn't it?
It was great analysis. They
need to beat him.
That's why they pay you the big bucks. Just a quick update. Scott Foster did just give Mook Marcus Morris a tech. So that's just fantastic stuff going on in the Western Conference right now. I do think you're right. Like, they have to stay within their system. He did not spank his ass. No, it did not happen. So it's not the best Mook tech we've ever seen. But they do need to play, like, I think with the Nets defense, like, the Cavs were able to get back in that game. And I feel like the Celtics, if they just play the way they can play on offense and don't fall into, like, a one-on-one pissing match between Tatum and Durant, like, I feel like that's the way the Celtics could potentially get in trouble. But, like, if they just kind of move the basketball, I just don't think the Nets defense is that well. And you're right, they are unproven. And I think, like, some of the skepticism comes from just Ime Udoka being in his first playoffs, and you just don't know what he's going to do. But people forget that Ime Udoka coached the Brooklyn Nets last year, so maybe he's got some inside knowledge. My colleague at The Athletic, but more your colleague, since you're an actual journalist, Jason Quick, who covers the Trailblazers for The Athletic, wrote a great story about Ime and kind of his Portland connection to two of his assistant coaches. I thought it was a fascinating story where Ime was kind of early on in the season hesitant. I mean, I called him a hard-o Ime from day one, but he was hesitant to call out his players really for the first 2 months of the season. And then with what they credit with the turnaround was him just lighting into them with a 75-minute or 75 different clip film session. And he's really been kind of coaching the team hard and holding guys accountable since then. I'm going to be very interested to see kind of if he does the same thing in the playoffs and kind of how that kind of hard coaching and holds over in the playoffs and what kind of adjustments Ime makes being in his first playoff series. I think it's just going to be fascinating to see what he does. And I just thought that was just a very interesting story from Jason Quick out of Portland.
Yeah, that was a great story. That part of the story that you just brought up was funny to me, that the assistant coaches felt like Ime was not coaching the Celtics hard when game two of the season, he tortures them publicly. Game four or five of the season, he tortures them again publicly. Game, like every other game, it felt like he was torturing somebody publicly.
Yeah, but he wasn't doing it privately. He wasn't being mean enough behind closed doors.
Sometimes you just got to ratchet up the mean level. And And so I thought that was really funny. And obviously, after that Western Conference road trip, like, that was a really, really bad trip. And the Celtics, they needed a kick in the ass. They needed, I think at that point, they were under 500 and getting their asses handed to them pretty regularly. And I can remember talking to some people around the team, some people around the league, and it was like, at that point, it was like, you know what, their statistical profile isn't that bad. And I can remember having conversations with people about, like, yeah, they're probably still like a top 10 team in the league, even the way they were playing when they were under 500, just because they had lost every close game, basically. And statistically, like, you're not just going to keep doing that. But I think at that time, the conversation was like, people, smart people that I know, were wondering whether it was the supporting cast fault or whether it was like the main guy's fault, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, their play style. And I think we've learned since that it was kind of all of the above. And obviously, you know, Tatum and Brown can play together. But also, I think they tweaked their playing styles and they have significantly improved at, you know, I don't want to say unselfishness, because I don't think they were ever selfish guys. I think they were always about winning. But like, just the habits of getting off the ball quicker, everything like that, just really, really has made a difference for everybody else around them. And then the supporting cast needed changes too. Like, going from Dennis Schroeder to Derek White has just been enormous change. And I think like that's made all the difference. But yeah, that quick, everyone should go read that quick story, because it was really, really good. And it gave another side of Ime. The other part that I really enjoyed about it and opened my eyes a little bit was how Damon Stoudemire was talking about how he felt the losing and the way the first half of the season went really impacted Ime. And that he as a friend, Damon Stoudemire was like worried for him. And just kind of let him know, like, I'm here for you if you want to talk. And he said Ime didn't talk about anything, but he just kind of knew like things weren't right just because of the way things were going for the Celtics. That was another really interesting part of that story. I thought we haven't really heard that, because Ime to us, Ime publicly, Ime in every way that we've seen, has just kind of been like very steady, very positive, very about his business. And so to hear that it impacted him like that was pretty eye opening. So yeah, everyone should go read that. What worries you the most about this first round series, besides just the fact like they have Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving can just touch God every once in a while?
Maybe that the Celtics like shots don't fall. Like, obviously you have the concern that it's like Kevin Durant, and Kevin Durant's the best player in the series and can just like dominate for four games. But beyond that, it just feels like that's the majority of the Nets team. Like, I don't just have that many concerns with the Celtics team. And I feel like the winning that they did, and the pure domination that they had for the final 4 months of the season. I know Robert Williams is out, but it takes me back to something. It's actually something Brad said when he opened his press conference after they lost to the Bucks in Kyrie's final year. And he just talked about like championship habits and how that team had zero championship habits and just like really could not rely on anything when things got tough. It feels like the Celtics can just rely on, they know what to do to win basketball games. And they've basically had 4 months of dominant basketball and playing basketball the right way. And Ime makes it sound very simple. It's just like, oh, playing hard on defense and sharing the ball, which I thought was a funny quote from him, because yeah, it sounds very simple that way. But the Celtics have been doing that for 4 months. And so I have much more faith in their ability to, when times get tough, when the Nets go on a little run, I just have more faith in the Celtics to react and go on a little run of their own. It feels like in this stretch, they have done a very good job of reacting to that, and never really getting down big themselves, but even if they do get down big, always responding. And I think I have the concern that they're going up against Kevin Durant and the Nets, or Kevin Durant and Kyrie, but I still have like pretty confident in the Celtics' ability to win this series. And I think that while there'll be tough games.
Yeah, I mean, I do think the Celtics will win the series. I just think their ability to defend
yellow
and to have size at every position and to put stress on the Nets' non-defenders will be really important. I also think, you know, you talk about those habits. I think offensively, the habits came about more recently, and they've been really good. But I think the right type of defense might be able to like send them back to some of the your turn, my turn stuff. I don't think the Nets have that type of defense. I don't think they'll be able to switch and force the Celtics into stagnant basketball because they don't have many capable defenders, quite frankly. But yeah, to me, like, I guess I asked the question, what worries you beyond Kevin Durant and Kyrie? Those two guys are the worry. that is the worry. And I think especially if you lose a game at home early and start pressing, if it's 2-2 coming back to Boston, you start to feel that a little bit, you know, and Kevin Durant, you know, he's won multiple championships. Nothing affects him. Kyrie Irving, he's won a championship. Like, I know he didn't have a great series when he was in Boston against Milwaukee, but he has played at the top level of basketball and done that quite often. And maybe I don't think he should be trusted to deliver like that the same way Durant is, but those guys have been there. They've done it at the top level enough that if they're in a 2-2 series and 5 minutes left, like, you can count on Durant. You know you can count on Durant. And this is a good series for Tatum to show how much he's changed in that in the last 5 minutes of a close game. Not that he has to take over every time and he has to score every time, but can he get his team a good chance? And that's what separates the truly greats, is that no matter what the situation is, they can get their team a great chance. They can figure out and solve whatever defense it is that the other team throws at them. And like I said, I don't know if the Nets will push him to that level where he needs to be that great, just because, like, they'll have a lot of smaller guys on him. He'll probably be able to get a lot of what he wants rather than what they want him to get. But what happens if it's 2-2, 5 minutes left in game five? You know, I think that's when it could matter that the other team has Kevin Durant and the Celtics don't.
Plus, I think Bruce, that's the Bruce big Brown's question, MVP, but I feel like Jason...
Bruce Brown, MVP.
I mean, Bruce Brown said Celtics not having Robert Williams is huge because then the Nets can attack Tyson Horford in the paint. I think that's going to be interesting. But from Jason Tatum perspective, I think he's been that much better as a playmaker this year. And so I think he's right now in a position, like, I think guys like Kevin Durant even talk about him like being he's the next guy up. And I think he's going to show that he's in that position to kind of, when it comes down to crunch time, he has an ability to put his team in the best position to win. But I think I wouldn't be surprised if the Celtics won the series in five games. Like, I just think that they are playing such better basketball that I think they can take the punch from Kevin Durant or Kyrie Irving and still win a game. And I just think that the Nets have just not shown anything at all that's like consistent defense. So I think the Celtics have a I wouldn't be surprised if they won five games, but then I think they also, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if Kevin Durant was Kevin Durant. That's some real middleman stuff, some real sitting on the fence, but I would be shocked if like the Nets came out and just like blew the doors off the Celtics. I think it's going to be close basketball games no matter what happens.
Yeah, and I think it depends on whether the Celtics are what they've been over the last 3 months. You know, like over the last 3 months, they have played like a historic juggernaut. Like they have just trounced teams. They have been number one in defense, number two in offense since they fell to 18 and 21 on, I think it was January 7th. Like that's a pretty big sample size of just kicking everyone's ass. And if the Celtics are that team, and if they're that team without Robert Williams still, which is another question mark, then this is not a Nets team that should beat them. Like, to me, as good as the Nets are, as good as their top two guys are, they're a flawed team. They're a team that, you know, if the Celtics really are a contender, like they've played like, then they should win this series with home court. But they also have to show that they are that team and that these last 3 months are real. Because, you know, as much as the Nets have struggled at times this season, when Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving are on the court, their offense scored 122.8 points per 100 possessions. They had a 13.1 net rating. Like, that's incredible. Those two guys, when they're on the court, that is a pretty unstoppable offense. And so this is no normal seven seed. As many flaws as the Nets have, it's no normal seven seed. And, you know, I think there are things that the Celtics will be able to pick on. There are things that they'll be able to take advantage of. But at the end of the day, like, the Nets aren't your average seven. Like, if Kevin Durant specifically had been healthy, if Kyrie had been able to play at home, that record is totally different, even if James Harden didn't play a second all season for them. So that's where the fear is. And, you know, the 13.1 points per 100 possessions, like, that is really, really freaking impressive. Jason Brown and Jason Tatum, when they're on the court, the Celtics are plus 14.5. So it's almost the same. Very similar. And
sounds like the Celtics are a little bit better, though. Sounds like 1.2 points, 100 points per possession. Yeah, I'm just saying.
And it is a series I think the Celtics' depth could really show out. Because I think Derek White is going to be a problem for their backups. I think, you know, whenever Durant's not out there, I think the Nets are really, really going to have trouble scoring against Boston. And I think the depth could be what shifts this toward Boston. Because I do, like, they have a much more complete team, a much deeper team of two-way threats and young guys who are closer to their prime than most of the guys on Brooklyn's supporting cast, who are either very young or just aren't quite as good as they used to be. Or are Ben Simmons and probably won't play at all.
Who knows what's going to happen? We'll be here later in the week. I think we'll be joined by the host of our Nets podcast and former producer of this podcast, Mike Smeltz, to talk about, get his perspective. He's going to talk all sorts of nonsense. He's a Nets fan for God knows what reasons. He's told me about it for a number of times, but it still doesn't make any sense. But we'll be back later in this week to give you more preview of Nets Celtics. And then, of course, after every game, we're still trying to figure out exactly what we're doing, but we'll give you all breakdowns after every single Nets Celtics game. And we'll be with you guys throughout the rest of the playoffs as far as this Celtics run goes. Jay, are you not, you're not the prediction type. Do you have a prediction for us now, or we got to wait for later on in the week?
Celtics in six.
Ooh, I like that prediction. I'm going Celtics in five. But you know what? I haven't really had a chance. The game just ended.
If they win on the road,
dive into the film.
If they win on the road, does Ime stomp on the Nets logo?
What logo? Just the Nets?
I don't even know what they're like. Just go to the Barclays Center sign and just stomp on it. Maybe spit on it.
I don't know if Ime holds that much resentment towards the Nets. He did wasn't
especially
for them for
Kyrie was on his team when Kyrie did that.
And I bet Ime was hyping him up. It was like, yeah, stomp
you,
that.
You think you think he told Kyrie to do that? That would be one hell of a twist.
I wouldn't be surprised. Ime's a cold dude. I think Ime was definitely dapped up Kyrie after that. I was like, hell yeah. You showed them. Because Ime was he wasn't about the Celtics then. He was about the Nets, and he's about making a title run. And I think he's going to bring that same intensity.
What are the odds Ime brings up that
as it
one of
film?
His motivational tools?
I think it's like one in eight. Nice little 12.5% chance.
He brought up when Joel Embiid said they didn't move the ball. Like he brought that up as motivation. I think there's pretty close to, I would say like 55% chance that Ime brings that up.
It's like Joel Embiid is like criticizing the way the Celtics play basketball. This is stomping on a metaphorical leprechaun. Like I just don't see why the Celtics would be like that offended by. Maybe that's just
see,
me.
Why you were never good at sports, because you never have pride.
I blocked the shit out of a 13-year-old just 3 days ago.
Yeah, but you had nothing for me once I went to the post.
Yeah, because you've got 60 pounds on me.
Because I got pride.
All right. I don't even respond to that. Is your pride potable?
It sure fucking is.
Anything is potable!
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.